Contract Properties is a homegrown, family-owned maintenance company located in Nashville. They provide HVAC, electrical, plumbing, painting, and many other services for commercial and residential properties. From build-outs to junk removal, one call does it all. Whether you're a homeowner or a property manager, give Contract Properties a call today for a free estimate. 615-356-0755. That's 615-356-0755. Or visit contractproperties.net.
Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone.
Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone, hour number two. Let's do this. Just leaving the practice field, Jimmy Wyatt. Let you know who did not practice today for the Titans again. Jim White just tweeted this out right as we were coming out of the commercial break. Not spotted on the practice field on Thursday for the Titans. Adam Humphries, A.J. Brown, Adoree Jackson, Chris Jackson, Ben Jones, Roger Saffold, Dennis Kelly, Michael Pruitt, Larrell Murchison, Jadeveon Clowney. He says Corey Davis returned to practice. He missed practice yesterday.
You know what? When I hear that list of not practicing, that's a little concerning. And I know I think they're all going to play if I was making a guess, but I don't like three of the five starting offensive linemen not practicing. Ben Jones, Saffo, you said, and Kelly?
Yeah, and Kelly, yeah.
Oh, man. And these dudes must be banged up.
And this was after some time away, right? I mean, this wasn't from a Sunday to now. That was from last Thursday to now.
Yeah, it's Thursday, man. I mean, these guys should be, it's been 7 days since they played in a game. Did they practice yesterday? I know Kelly didn't.
Yeah.
I think Tafo did, but I didn't.
No, I'll tell you, I got it because I saved the tweet from yesterday. I knew we were talking about, here's who didn't practice yesterday. Humphries, Adoree Jackson, Corey Davis, who's back today, Ben Jones, no from yesterday, Roger Saffold, no from yesterday, Michael Pruitt, Larrell Murchison, and Jadeveon Clowney all did not practice yesterday.
Oh, but Kelly did, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't practice today. So that, but it was par for the course because he's been missing like periodically every week, something, you know, a day or two, just so I think it always says knee on there. I don't know what it is. He may have. You know, may need, you know, some rest or something, just swelling up or whatever. But yeah, man, we going into a physical matchup versus the Ravens. Who's going, you know, hopefully they'll be fresh then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they going to bring it in the trenches. Man, I watched last year's game in the playoffs and then I watched them versus the Steelers today. And I was like, ooh, that defense. I know some guys going to be missing. But they still look like they all look the exact same.
Oh gosh.
Big
and have tall. and Blaine, and they have now for how many years?
Yeah, it's funny.
They always look like the Ravens.
Yeah, they was a physical and fast and just athletic. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not looking good. I gotta stop watching. I'm gonna go back and watch the offense.
Well, Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams both missed practice yesterday and today. And we had the AP writer on yesterday from Baltimore, David Ginsburg. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, Blaine, what did he say? He didn't think either one of them
would play. You asked him that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he didn't answer. And then I said, so what do you think will happen to Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams? And he said, I don't think either one of them will play because I need to look at this. I think they have a game on Thursday against, yep, they have Thursday against the Steelers.
Yeah, remember, that's why I was asking where they're going to look ahead. He said, oh, no, they'll never do
it. No.
Well, that's maybe why some guys may not play, too, if it's borderline injury. Like, we got a short week for the next game. That's the one that really counts. And they got him last time. I think Lamar Jackson versus Steelers the first time, I think he had two fumbles and two interceptions. I think he had like two or three turnovers, whatever it was. Because that's Spillane, remember? He got a pick touchdown.
Freaking Spillane, former Titan out there balling.
Yes. Oh, I remember I liked him. He was good, man. He was smart and he didn't put himself in compromised positions in coverage. That was what stood out because he wasn't quite as foot speed you want as a starter.
Right.
I thought he'd be a great backup. But I think they loved him too as well.
Like special teams too, that cat.
Yeah. Yeah, just fortunate he didn't get the stick put back on practice squad.
Well, and they're 3 games behind Pittsburgh now in the division, 9-0 versus 6-3. So, they got a game on Thursday. So maybe they just say, hey, that's the more important game in the big picture for us than this game, and just try to get those guys. Well, because here's the other thing. They have to leave on, what, Wednesday to get there because they play in Pittsburgh on Thursday.
Oh, so that even shortens your travel.
Mm-hmm. Shortens your week even another day
for preparation. No question.
Mm-hmm. Let's JT. I feel like we need music for this, like soap opera music, as the punter turns for the Tennessee Titans. Because here's the latest.
Yeah, sound it. Punter Kern. I mean, turns.
Boy, hey man. If I'm Vrabel, I'm calling. Hey Kern, how you feeling, man? Can I bring you anything? Anything you need? Are you doing okay? Can I bring you some ice? You
know,
you
have a cast on his whole body or arm. You know, we just can't go nowhere.
Like sand through the hourglass.
I put something on.
So
sure.
Are
you got
the days of
this?
Our lives.
Like sand through the hourglass. Okay, here's what's going on at punter for the Tennessee Titans. Trevor Daniel is now once again the punter for the Tennessee Titans. He's back on the 53-man roster, the former Tennessee punter.
UT.
So he was the punter, or he wasn't. He was working a 9-to-5 like a lot of us. Then he was the punter. Then he was released. He goes through waivers. He goes back to the practice squad. He's the punter again, Trevor Daniel. Ryan Allen, who people are going to even forget that he ever was a thing for this team, probably if they haven't already, he's back on the practice squad. So Ryan Allen punted 8 times against the Bengals, 50.5-yard average. And the other thing is this, when they signed that guy Blaine, because people were like, oh, well, they brought in like 3 punters to work out, and none of them were Ryan Allen. Because your guy Aaron Wilson from Houston, he tweets out like this guy worked out for this team and this guy, because it's all public knowledge. The NFL releases it. Ryan Allen, I didn't see him on the initial list. Then they had a kicker from Missouri, Tucker McCann, who'd also punted at Missouri for his final year. Well, he wound up on IR, so he practice squad IR, so he disappears. So Ryan Allen got cut last week so Trevor Daniel could punt because they said Ryan Allen didn't practice as well as Trevor Daniel. So then Trevor Daniel almost got a punt blocked and shanked it. Then he did get a punt block, but there are people all around him. I mean, it is what it is. But the thing about Ryan Allen is this. You got a kicker who's struggling, who has this weird yip from beyond 50 yards. Ryan Allen was his hunter. My neighbor was telling me he was going deer hunting Saturday, so I have hunting on my mind. Ryan Allen was the holder for Gostkowski for 6 years in New England. Don't you think? If you're sitting there with no sock on thinking, oh, God, can I make this? At least if you're looking down at the guy in front of you and you knew he held for a bunch of your kicks that probably could put you in the Hall of Fame, would you not breathe a little easier? Because you just know what he's going to do. Am I crazy for thinking that? 6 years they worked together. 6 years.
Hey, man. Hey, that makes a lot of sense for me, Mickey, but we're not there and watching practice and seeing what's going on. And they say, hey, how do you feel about this, you know, snapper and holder and this, you know, hey, man. I don't know how all those things work, but it would bother me. I would want everything consistent and somebody I'm comfortable with. But, you know, some people just say, hey, man, we're going with the guy that we feel like is the best one. And he's performed regularly here at practice, which we don't get to see.
Yeah, see, that's true.
Where, you know, we're conflicted because, you know, Ryan Allen did a really good job, but he did have a low trajectory on his punts, even against them, the Bengals, but they never pressed him to block it. So he did a really good job. So maybe they're, you know, smarter than us and they're going with the one that they trust. Hey, that's all we can do, man. All I care about is punt that thing off your foot. Don't shank it. Don't get it blocked.
Just don't let it. don't let us punting result in an immediate touchdown would be my advice to everybody on special teams. Hey, when we punt the ball, there just better not be a touchdown that happens on that play.
So, hey, man, kick it through the uprights, man. That's all we care about. Let's go.
Coach Blaine. Barrett Sully was sent to join us, but apparently he had to buy a car. So Josh Ward, who is Blaine's favorite, the most pacifying, soothing voice on radio, and he knows the Vols, set to join us on Blaine and Mickey 104.5. Josh Ward jumps on with Blaine and Mickey as we get this second hour really getting rolling here. We'll talk a little Vols and Auburn and more. Josh, I got to tell you, I was listening, and so Josh is on Sports Animal in Knoxville. He's on Sports 180. That's a show, Josh and Heather. And he's got the Locked On Vols podcast, which Blaine and I are both telling you, I literally listen to it every day. So anytime you put up a new episode, I'm one of the first people to listen. I'm sure I love it. But you had the Locked On Auburn guy. And when you guys were discussing the point spread, I thought this was the funniest thing. But this tells you where both fan bases are. You brought up the number, which is, what, 10.5 now. And he said, yeah, man, we couldn't believe it was that big. And you said, Vol fans can't believe it's that small. And both of you were dead serious. That says so much about where these programs are.
Right. Yeah. Friends of mine that are Tennessee fans, they're texting me Sunday afternoon when the line hits saying 10.5. That's free money. Take Auburn. You know, so Auburn on the other side is, they can't believe it's that high. Tennessee can't believe it's that low. And we're trying to meet the conversation somewhere in the middle. So it'll probably end up, people will get a push no matter what you end up doing, and it'll be a 10-11 point game. In the end, that actually still wouldn't be good for Tennessee because that's a two possession finish. But it's just the mood around Tennessee football, to bring it back to that side, is not great right now. And it's obvious why, because of what's happened over the last four games. And I think the last time I was on with you guys, we were talking about the Arkansas game. Is it a must win? I said, well, it's a better not lose game. And they went out and lost it, and lost it impressively in the second half. And then Tennessee fans, they were thankful that the Texas A&M game got postponed, but they've had 2 weeks because of that to sit here and think about what could happen next.
And there's so much to discuss. As you say that, number one, I saw this from Teresa Walker earlier today. If the Vols lose, this will match what they're trying to avoid, their longest losing skid since 1988, when they started, 0-6. They're trying not to get to that point of matching that skid. But no, yeah, they started 0-6 that year. But this will be the longest losing skid, I think, since then, if they lose five in a row, because Butch Jones in his last year lost four at one point. That's it. Longest losing streak since 1988 if they lose to Auburn.
Okay. I guess I didn't realize that. Yeah, because in 17, they had a non-conference win that broke up the Ofer in SEC play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not good. And that's coming out of an 8-game winning streak. You know, think about it. Four to 6 weeks ago, I guess, the bye weeks kind of run together now. But we were talking about Tennessee being right up there among the best Power Five winning streaks in all of college football. And Tennessee football was on the rise and rising quickly. And they have the first half lead against Georgia. And it's been off a cliff since then. So the conversation is completely flipped in a month and a half.
Yeah, so that's it. It would be the longest losing streak since losing six in a row, with nothing standing between that except for Vandy if they can't beat Auburn this weekend. Josh Ward, our guest from the Sports Animal and Locked On Vols.
Well, Josh, I have to ask you, you know, Muschamp, thanks for coming on first and foremost. It was let go. I mean, does, you know, everybody thought that, you know, C-19 was going to give an exception year to the coaches, and none of them were going to get fired or canned or what have you. And now that's happened, do you think other schools are going to be looking at it like, you know what, we can make a move too if things don't go according to plan?
You know, it's interesting you say that too, because go back to the spring and summer when we're desperate to get sports back. And right. I think we had conversations, all of us probably at some point, you know what, we'll just be thankful for sports. People aren't going to be over the top with their reaction. That's not how it works in college football, is it? So at South Carolina, fans are not happy. They're not happy up in Ann Arbor. Penn State, a little different, but this season, they're obviously not happy with how things are going. And in Knoxville, that's absolutely the case. And I think part of the reaction this week from some of Tennessee's fans, not all, but some of Tennessee's fans, and it's a growing group, is oh, South Carolina's getting ahead of us here in the coaching search. We need to jump in. And I don't think that's where Tennessee is going to be. I don't think that on November 19th, things could change. I never rule anything out, especially with Tennessee football. But right now, I don't think that's where Tennessee is headed this year. We did just see Philip Fulmer, who got his own extension earlier in the year, hand an extension to Jeremy Pruitt. And I think right now that Jeremy Pruitt's still his guy. Now, what if Tennessee were to lose out? Could things change? Again, I think anything's possible. But back to the response of some of Tennessee's fans, and it's not that small of a group anymore. I think a lot looked and said, well, hey, South Carolina's going to go get Hugh Freeze. That's what you hear a lot. South Carolina's going to go get Hugh Freeze. We want Hugh Freeze. We need to make a move to keep South Carolina from getting him. And I don't think that's the reality, but that is a mindset of some of Tennessee's fans, which is a statement by itself.
Well, I know, with Josh Ward, Coach Fulmer, or, AD Fulmer now, got an extension unbeknown to any of us, which was a little surprising. But we're talking about the coach, Pruitt, and if things would change if they lost to Vanderbilt, do you think that'll be the last straw for Mr. Fulmer?
See, that's what would be really bad, because
really bad.
Yeah, if Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, I'm going to go ahead and guess Tennessee will have lost to Auburn as well. So you're talking about a six-game losing streak. At that point, you really are hoping that the Florida and A&M games get canceled so you don't have to play them, because it's going to be ugly. Think about that scenario, too, to add to the idea of a loss to Vanderbilt, which could be Vanderbilt's only win this year. And the fact that it's that game in the rivalry, Florida and A&M are both going to come to Knoxville extremely motivated, most likely. They're both thinking, let's try to get to the playoff. Well, what's something that can help with that? You go put up a huge number against at least a name that people are going to pay attention to in Tennessee. And I think that's what a lot of Tennessee fans are fearing, that as bad as things feel right now, there's the potential for it to get much worse. And if Tennessee were to lose to Vanderbilt, there's not going to be anybody on Jeremy Pruitt's side. That's among the fans, and it's going to be difficult to find support in the athletic department. And if there is a scenario that would have what I just said be wrong in the end, that they just gave Jeremy Pruitt an extension and they can't make a move, at least in the eyes of Phil Fulmer and people in the athletic department, lose to Vanderbilt, and that would very much challenge what I just said.
No doubt about it. Well, with Josh Ward, I guess before I get back to Mickey, is Josh, just tell us, if you were rolling the dice and you were the coach, who's starting a quarterback? And then tell us who they will start.
Yeah. Well, I have been of the opinion here last week and this week. Last week, if they were going to play Texas A&M, and this week, now having an extra week of practice, I would prepare Harrison Bailey to play. And if in practice you see enough from him to believe that, you know what, we can move the football with him, we can have enough success, we can call plays and put him in a position where he can move the ball through the air and limit the mistakes that he's probably going to make as a freshman quarterback, I would play Harrison Bailey. I would see what you have there. See if that's something that you can build on within the offense over the next few weeks. What was the biggest issue we heard about from Jeremy Pruitt? Well, he didn't have the practice reps. He got them last week. Garantano couldn't practice because of the head injury. Brian Maurer has lost confidence with the coaching staff. Same with JT Shrout from a few weeks ago. So Bailey's got the practice reps. I'm not seeing what's going on behind the scenes because everything's closed. But if they're seeing enough to build on, considering he's the talented, highly touted guy who's now getting a practice opportunity, and if the players see that there's something to build on, I would play him. If it's been a disaster behind the scenes, then you play Garantano. But now you're thinking about trying to build through the next 4 weeks and with something into next year.
Well, I got to ask you one more question. With that being said, do you think Harrison Bailey is the guy? Because I'm looking at other freshmen across the country, and I see that they're playing, even if they didn't have, camp, just like everybody else. Yeah. And I go, it's either development or he's not the guy, and they're hesitating because they're seeing some things at practice that we're not getting to see.
Yeah, there's a reason that they had Brian Maurer and JT Shrout ahead of Bailey, right? And there's a reason that in practice they decided it's not worth it to give Bailey these reps. Let's give it to other guys. I don't know. If you go back to the recruiting process, Jim Chaney was at Georgia, really, when Tennessee was full steam ahead getting Harrison Bailey. And after he was committed, Tennessee went strong after Haynes King with Jim Chaney as the OC. He ends up signing with Texas A&M. Tennessee really wanted him. Jim Chaney really wanted Haynes King. So I do wonder about Chaney's evaluation of Harrison Bailey. Next year, though, let's see if Caden Salter can come in and compete. But the best chance, if they don't find a really good option as a transfer after the season, the best chance for Tennessee to bounce back and succeed is probably with either Harrison Bailey or Caden Salter. So for Tennessee's sake, it's important that Harrison Bailey can play in the SEC. That's why I would be really curious to find out in the game. See what he can do if he's shown you anything behind the scenes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're with Josh Ward with Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville.
So Blaine and I, we were at the end of a show this week, and I had written this down as my notes, and we didn't get a long time to discuss it. And then we had like a minute at the end of a show. But Jeremy Pruitt was talking about the practices without Garantano where he was hurt. And he essentially said, yeah, we're repping all the quarterbacks. Everybody's getting a lot of reps. And I was incredulous to that. You're not going to play everybody. At this point, some of those guys aren't even going to be here next year. What are you doing? Why not just give all – like, Mike Vrabel never comes on and goes, boy, we gave a lot of reps to Trevor Siemian today. We're feeling really good about that. What are we doing, Josh? Why not just give all the reps to Bailey or Maurer or whoever you think can help you win a game, either in conjunction with Garantano or if he can't go? Why are you still giving everybody reps when they're all not going to play?
Well, I can assure you, Mickey, you're not the only one asking, what are they doing at the quarterback position? Yeah. Get in line. It's a long one with that question, whether we're talking about development. I mean, it all goes together in terms of who's first in line, second, third, whatever, and how the developmental process has taken place over the last few years. And that's with different OCs. That's with different quarterbacks, coaches, and maybe that's part of the issue, too. I think it's a combo of evaluation, recruiting misses. They could have Michael Penix on the roster right now. Tennessee chose not to have him, and he's doing quite well up at Indiana. I think they had a really good shot at Sam Howell. He's doing quite well at North Carolina, which, you know, fans don't want to hear about at this point, but that's what has partly led them to this position. But if we're talking about Harrison Bailey, who they've probably evaluated to have more upside, now's the time, I think. And let's also see, we heard so much about the other freshman receivers. Brandon Kennedy this week, Tennessee's senior at center, said these freshman receivers, what do? They can create explosive plays. What have we not seen from Tennessee's offense on Saturdays this fall? Explosive plays. Well, then explain to me why they haven't been out there. So this Saturday, I think you need to see what they do at quarterback, see what they do at receiver. The offense has really lacked big play ability. It has not even really shown that potential very often, except for one guy, Jalen Hyatt, a freshman. Do we see Malachi Wideman? Do we see another guy get an opportunity? Because otherwise, I think fans have seen enough.
Well, Blaine made a good point earlier this week. You know, nobody even gets to really see practice. So coaches can control whatever narrative. They can say this guy's good or this guy's not or this guy's really coming on. That's something we talked about earlier. But for Brandon Kennedy, he doesn't have any – I mean, he's got no agenda.
He talks about the explosive playability that these guys
that's
have.
That's real. Yeah, hey, man, these young guys really make plays. He would like to see them make more plays, I'm sure. Do you think
somebody
got to
pull the? But somebody has to pull the trigger. The receivers are only as good as the quarterback getting the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's why I'm hesitant to really dive into what Jeremy Pruitt says about the quarterback position, because we hear about Jared Garantano looking good in practice, and by comparison with what we've seen from Brian Maurer and JT Schrout, he has been the better guy. The one guy we haven't really seen is Harrison Bailey. We saw him at the end of the Arkansas game. That was not a scenario where he was going to have a lot of success. We saw him in the fourth quarter against Kentucky. There wasn't much there to look at. So let's see. But with Maurer and Schrout, it has not been good at all. So their judgment with those two compared to Garantano has been right. You play JG. But let's see with Harrison Bailey. Again, I'm confused why he hasn't had more practice opportunity considering what we have seen in the games from Brian Maurer and JT Schrout.
All right, before I hand this back to Blaine, I have to ask you this just because we got you on. Jeremy Pruitt asked about everybody returning for 2021. All of our guys have the opportunity, and we would love to have them all back. It's a unique circumstance. You're smiling. You heard that, when you heard those words, what in the world went through your mind?
Who didn't immediately think sixth-year senior starting quarterback Jarrett Garantano coming for Peyton Manning's records? That's not the scenario that I think Tennessee fans want to think of. They don't want to hear about it. Oh. But who didn't think that immediately with the idea of all the seniors coming back? And by the way, I don't think that's how it's going to play out. I would think that Tennessee's ready to move on. I would think that Jarrett's ready to move on. In the middle of the 2019 season, though, didn't we think that Jarrett would probably move on after this year? And he came back. So, again, we are talking Tennessee football right now. Who can rule out any kind of scenario?
Up is down, down is up. Josh Ward on the radio with us from WNML and Locked On Vols.
Yeah, I've been saying that since week one about that he could come back.
Yeah.
Not thinking that it could be a real possibility. But anyway, that's JG.
Well, I think that's scary for fans. What if Harrison does play and he doesn't play well?
Play well. Mm-hmm.
Then you probably within the game have to go back to Jared. Like if they start Harrison, like I'm suggesting here, because they've seen enough in practice, say, let's give him a shot. And he really struggles. You're still trying to win a game, right? Your goal is to go out there and win. We saw last year they went back to Jarrett and he did well coming off the sideline. What if they do that again and that's still their best option? I mean, you're still trying to find the best. The coaching staff really wanted Jarrett back this year. Maybe they could in 2021.
And that's always kind of interesting too, because he wasn't their recruit and they're showing that kind of loyalty to him, which is actually kind of interesting in itself. But we have to talk about the coaches who didn't take the voluntary cut. And I'm asking, everybody's situation is so different. And the salaries are a big gap. Some probably could afford or not. And we don't know their situation. Coaches making $1 million could have two vacation homes or a house in one state and another. We don't know their personal situation. But what was Jeremy Pruitt saying? This is not the last of this that we're going to have a conversation. This is still an open book. Like, well, you're going to make these guys take cuts? Because I think part of it is because they saw what you did with one of the coaches. They said, well, you just fired him in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Man, I better not take a pay cut because I'm liable to not be here. You just sent out a message to your coaching staff that, hey, man, granted, you get your money. Guess what? They say, well, I'm not going to start changing myself and miss out on $200,000. And he fired me and I took a cut. I mean, so what do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah, to me, that was the biggest explanation for coaches declining. Maybe not all of them, but for some coaches,
right. Everybody's
at least.
Situation different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they just saw what happened with Jimmy Brumbaugh. And you're looking at the timeline and thinking, well, okay, we're about to head into November. We got a month left in the season. I don't know if I'm going to be here in mid-December. Why would I give money back to the university when I'm going to be moving on, either by looking for another job or Jeremy Pruitt's going to tell me to look for another job? To me, that spoke to the lack of commitment that may exist behind the scenes. Again, maybe not with everybody, but with a lot of them. And there were only two coaches that took pay cuts with the initial agreement. And it is not a coincidence. It can't be that the two that said yes are the two guys that played at the University of Tennessee, Jay Graham mm-hmm. and T. Martin. And that the only people in the athletic department with contracts that said no were the football assistant coaches under Jeremy Pruitt. I was also really confused that he said he didn't know about their final decisions until the story came out in the New Sentinel and admitted, the story's accurate. So was Phil? I'm a little confused on the timeline. Was Philip Fulmer giving a statement to the New Sentinel on the decision with Jeremy Pruitt not even knowing their decision? It's almost an unbelievable story, right? So when he talks about the final chapter, I'm guessing with the pushback that they received, that can't be received well behind the scenes. How do you walk into the office and you have your secretary or staff member that's making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 that has to take a pay cut, but somebody that's making 10, 20 times that is declining to? So that's not a great sign, not a great indication of culture behind the scenes, which I would say needs to change.
No doubt about it, man. Well, we thank you, Josh, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh Moore.
6 days.
Yes, keep telling yourself, Doug, we've got basketball coming ahead. At Josh _ Ward, Josh and Heather on WNML, and I can't, again, once again, because I can't necessarily listen to you guys because we're doing our thing, but Locked On Vols podcast for all Vol fans, a great spot to kind of get your fix every day. Appreciate the time as always, and people can catch you tomorrow with your three keys for UT versus Auburn. You do this every week on 3HL. That's at 3:45 tomorrow. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Josh Ward, smoothest voice that there is on Tennessee radio, as Blaine likes to say, and I agree with it. When we come back, JT is mad at me and has a bone to pick with me, and he's been telling me for about 24 hours he's coming after me. So uh-oh, that's next. I'm going to go prepare myself. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Final segment for us today before we give it up for 3HL on this beautiful Thursday. Get outside today. Do something nice before it gets dark at 4 o'clock, you know, because that's what we do around here once the time changes. But it's all good. JT told me yesterday, hey, man, I'm going to lay into you at some point. And then the show got busy and sports stuff happened. And we're still busy. But he told me again today, like, we're not leaving these airwaves today before I attack you.
Oh, Man, I would really love to hear you guys go at it because you're two of the nicest guys and probably wouldn't ever. Well, you know, Mickey did say, shut your mouth.
But, shut your mouth.
But would ever raise their tone towards anybody. So this would be a good, you know, drag out attack back at each other. That'd be really cool.
Well, let me preface this. So tomorrow will be Titans heavy, Samari Roll, Buck Rising of A to Z Sports. So I wanted to put this on the table before we get too close to Thanksgiving. Mickey, this is just a simple couple of questions, and you just answer honestly, and maybe you tell me why you like these in which order. Your first, if you have to pick one, the best number one top holiday, it can be whatever you would like it to be. If Mickey Ryan said, my favorite holiday of the year is, you insert what and tell me why.
Easy. Halloween. Growing up in the country, you know, middle of nowhere, gravel road. For one day a year, you got to be Ace Frehley or Luke Skywalker or, you know, whoever you wanted to be. And
Spider-Man.
And people gave you a gigantic bag of candy. So, although I grew up in the country, you got a lot of homemade candy. Some kids don't even know what I'm talking about. But still, popcorn balls, things like
that. What? Popcorn balls? What are those? Did they get that off of cow's balls?
I don't think you can say that. Anyway,
is it trick or treat? Here you can have some balls.
Yes, like old ladies on my road. It's like popcorn that's stuck together in the shape of balls that they would wrap up. Although I'm telling you, sometimes they weren't even wrapped, just straight out the old lady's hand into your sack.
What did they use to wrap those balls? Was it, I mean, what was to help hold them?
What did they wrap those balls with?
Half of their balls.
Were they salty?
Yeah, a little bit. Sweet and salty before that was the thing. So half of their balls were just raw. Like they would just bowl them up and drop them right into your candy sack. The other half of the people who made those, and they competed. There's a thing. They competed for the title of, you know, like whose popcorn balls were the best, who were the biggest, you know, the saltiest. And the other ones were wrapped in like saran wrap. So to answer your question, JT,
biggest saltiest balls.
This was just to clarify. This was on Wiener Cutoff Road, right?
I never trick or treated. I never trick or treated on the Wiener. Nobody lived on that road. You don't. Only two farmers, literally, in my side of the county. It was all farmland. The Wiener Cutoff Road is a road that runs from Harrisburg, Arkansas to Wiener, Arkansas. There weren't enough houses. When you lived in the country, you really had to budget your time. So to go back to your original question before we got into salty balls, Halloween number one.
Okay, number two is what?
Thanksgiving.
Why?
It has the three Fs. Football, food, and family.
Okay.
It's all three Fs. It's my three favorite things celebrated in one day.
Ooh, nice.
Okay, there so we are at Halloween, top of the list. Number two, Thanksgiving. Number three, your third favorite holiday is?
And please don't take umbrance to my Lord.
We're going to rip you, Mickey.
Because I love Jesus, but Christmas is like a hard number three for me in this. And I love Jesus, and I celebrate his birth eagerly each year. But just, I'm Halloween. I'm in the order that they go is the way that I like them.
Oh, so my. Christmas, you see how Christmas he made an excuse three. Before he said this? Not to offend anybody.
That is all fair with me. And I'm going to preface this with, I think David Reed from the Midday 180 said that he had his Christmas tree up in mid-October. What? I put my Christmas tree up a couple of days ago, but why in the hell, Mickey? How can a guy that has Thanksgiving at number two completely just disregard Thanksgiving and put up your Christmas tree before Thanksgiving?
You did that?
It's a two-word answer. Are you ready? I'm married.
Oh, no, you said it wasn't me.
That's my three-word answer. Hey, man, when mama says get the Christmas decorations out the garage, guess what we all do? Get the Christmas decorations out of the garage. I got lights up outside, man. We ain't messing around over here.
I was just casually scrolling through Instagram, and I see that Mickey Ryan a couple of days ago put up his Christmas tree, and I thought that is total garbage because I know that I know that Thanksgiving is his second favorite holiday besides the day that he gets to dress up and stuff his face with awful candy, and you are completely just taking Thanksgiving and just stepping on it.
I'm not. I mean, I don't have a turkey tree.
You should.
So it's a coast. You should. It's a coast celebration. I should.
Now listen, don't be mad at me.
It's a coast celebration.
My tree is up. I'm happy. I have no issue with people putting their tree up early. If you do, that's completely fine. But if Thanksgiving is your second favorite holiday, you can't put up your Christmas tree before Thanksgiving if you choose Thanksgiving above Christmas.
Even in 2020, we need something to smile about, man. It's
Christina
been a long
Ryan.
Year, JT.
Christina Ryan, this is unacceptable. I'm going to talk to your wife, Christina. This is unacceptable. By the way,
Christmas is number one for her.
I was talking about this with Jonathan Schaefer this morning. Back behind us, there are nice new condos. He said that since all the COVID stuff has happened, there is a small Christmas tree that he sees lit up every morning when he comes into work around 4 a.m. That's been up for months and months and months and months and months.
That gives him joy.
Yeah, sure. But I hope that everyone that likes Thanksgiving understands that you don't truly love Thanksgiving as much as you pretend.
Yeah, I'm all in on Thanksgiving, the three F's. When does your tree go up, Blaine?
Usually December 1st. But I'm just like you and everybody else. They just, when my wife says, oh, it's time for the tree, and I get to move it. I move immediately. I don't wait till like the weekend or nothing. I start getting all the stuff down out the attic.
You guys have to put it up immediately, like as soon as Christmas is over. Christmas, like the night of the 25th, if I'm at home, I'm ready to put that thing up.
That night?
Yes, that night.
Hey, Henry on Twitter says, popcorn balls were great, so were apple-dipped caramel treats. Like sometimes somebody would give you a caramel apple, too. I got one of those when I was trick-or-treating.
Good. I haven't had one of those in a long time.
But Blaine. Like
they
not,
to you out
not
of like that, just not wrapped or nothing, just sitting on the porch.
Sitting on the porch, like just a thing of caramel apples that the lady had made in a tub on the porch, and you just take one.
Oh, that you got to tweet that out. What's the weirdest trick or treat thing you've gotten when you go trick or treat?
All right, I'll have to try to ask this question. We'll do that. We'll put that out. Check out at BBishop23 at Mickey Ryan 1045. We'll have to ask the weirdest thing you ever got trick-or-treating. Even though it's after Halloween, it came up on the show. It's fair game.
Mickey's answer would be salty balls.
And with that, we'll see you tomorrow. 3HL is next.